There is nothing worse than untapped potential. If you know that you're made for more, this is the place. I know that every successful person I've ever met has one thing in common. They do not let themselves fall victim to their circumstances. They figure out a way to rise above it. So join me on this journey where I help you to be better, do better, and have better in life and in business. If you're feeling stuck and you're needing some practical tools, some hope to get you to that better life, this is definitely a place for you. Hey everyone, welcome to the Unstuck Podcast. I am your host, Michelle Weamy, and we get a chance to talk to Michelle Thompson today. You guys, Michelle is a phenomenal woman, and the two of us really connected because we're both nurses, which is really cool. So we both have this heart and this passion for serving other people, but her story is so incredible, you guys, and you're going to learn so much from her and her journey and how she shows up in the world today that I cannot wait to get this conversation started. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh my goodness, thank you so much for having me. We were just saying that it's still dark here. It's very early in the morning, but I couldn't imagine a better way to start my day with a cup of tea and spending time with you and your listeners. So thank you for having me.
Well, we're so glad you're here. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself today, Michelle? Like, what is it that you're doing these days? How are you serving the world? What lights you up?
Yeah, well, like you said, I am a registered nurse. I have primarily worked in the long-term care sector almost my entire nursing career, and I have my national certification in gerontology. And I still have a connection there. I just can't seem to let it go. It's in my bones, and I love it so much. But what I have primarily transitioned to in terms of my own personal business is leadership development and coaching. And that's really because of an experience that I had very early in my leadership career that I know we'll get to and we'll talk about, because that's, you know, part of what got me here and why I felt so stuck. So I'm loving the work that I'm doing, and I finally think that at 51 I've found my true purpose.
That's amazing. And I love that, because it's all a journey, right? And I truly, truly believe, you guys, that nothing that we've experienced, no title that we've had, degree we've had, experience that we've had, is ever at a loss. It's leading you towards where God is designing you to be. And so I just think that there's so many reasons that you are exactly equipped to be where you are today. And if it wasn't for all of these other things, like, this wouldn't be your destiny. But you have been on that journey, and all of us, you know, are on the same, right? We're all on this journey of figuring out why we're here and how we can contribute to the world. And you've been doing it in all of these different ways all along. So it's so much fun to see you kind of step into this new season. And I would love for you to tell us a little bit more about the leadership coaching and who you specifically serve. Like, who is the typical clientele that you are currently serving?
Yeah, I mean, I think that because I'm so close to healthcare and I understand that space so well, I naturally, most of my clients are healthcare providers or professionals of some capacity. And a lot of them are on a leadership journey, and they're really struggling with the current state of our healthcare system. I mean, I don't think it matters where you are in the world and what kind of healthcare system your country has. We're all struggling right now. It's just people, you know, have left, and the people that are left are really just unsure of kind of the next right step for them, and they're looking for some guidance. So I'm hoping that I can provide that to them. But I also do a lot of work with healthcare professionals in terms of being able to support their own well-being. So not just in the leadership capacity, but a portion of leadership, I believe. I believe that a good part of leadership is an exchange of energy. The way that I show up, and the way that I manage myself is a direct reflection of the interaction I'm going to have with other people. And so the ability for you to do that in a good way for everybody is being able to understand how we're hardwired to connect. And also, how do we provide ourselves the self-care and the nourishment that we need and deserve and are worthy of. And so a lot of the work that I do as well is around how to incorporate self-care into your daily life and not have it be one more checklist off the things to do, but also understanding that a lot of healthcare professionals, in my opinion and my experience, are people pleasers. They have a tendency to be people pleasers and to be perfectionists, and often have a difficult time setting boundaries.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, feel that to be in a position of service means that often it's to the detriment of their own mental health. And I just don't believe that needs to be the case. So I'm hoping that I can also help people in those aspects of their personal life to kind of unwind some of those pieces, so that when they show up at work, they're better prepared to kind of manage all the things that get thrown at you when you're a healthcare professional.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I can relate to so many of the things that you just said. You know, I think about like I'm helping a small hospital right now, you know, as I can, like here and there. And one of the things that's really fascinating is that like there are no breaks at all built into my day. Other people on my team have people that come in and relieve them in the operating room. And I do not have that luxury because I'm by myself. There's nobody that can do my job. And I'm also, you know, honored to be able to do this, but it also adds a lot of complexity to my day. But I get to see all of my patients and do their pre-op assessments. And then I help them fall asleep and stay with them while they're asleep, wake them back up, make sure they're okay in the recovery room, and then do the whole thing over again. There is no break in the day. And so I find at the end of the day, I'm hungry, dehydrated, you know, exhausted, and really just recognizing that I can't show up for people that I care about as much as I want to, because I neglected myself all day long. And so I think that it's that realization that I have to learn to take care of myself and have self-leadership in order for me to be able to lead, to influence, to be able to support the people around me. And so I think that it's really important that you mentioned that as well.
Thank you. So yeah, I know I speak often to a lot of moms who you know, also don't look at it from the perspective of a lesson to show their right. children about right. self-nourishment and self-love mm-hmm. and worthiness
mm-hmm. yeah.
of being able to take that time without guilt. The yeah. world isn't going to stop spinning and nobody's going to die if you take 10 minutes
right.
to
right.
just go and sit and breathe or have a cup of tea like I am,
yeah.
call a girlfriend for a few minutes. It doesn't have to be a big gesture, but it's a huge lesson to teach people that those small shifts embedded multiple times through your day can have monumental impacts on yes. the quality of our mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's interesting that you say that, because yesterday I had lunch with a good friend who's super, super successful, and I have so much respect for her. And I was saying that I'm like, goodness, like there's a couple of decisions that I'm needing to make in my business. And I'm like, ah, I just don't know. I don't know what to do. And she's like, you do know what to do. She's like, are you taking time in the middle of your day to meditate, to slow down, to ask your inner self, your God, what it is that you need to do? And it's like, you sometimes forget that those small areas of our day that we can slow down enough to be able to listen to our inner knowing is actually going to be more productive than me running around with my head cut off all day, scrambling and asking everybody else what they think I should do. Whereas if I could just take a couple of minutes every single day as a discipline and really start to quiet my mind and quiet my heart, I can actually figure the answers out myself. And I'm like, oh my gosh, why haven't I been doing that?
Because sometimes we miss the simplest things.
Right. And I actually, one of my favorite stories, and I want to say that I learned about this in Think and Grow Rich, but I might be wrong, that Thomas Edison actually used to do this practice every single day, where he would sit in his thinking chair, he called it, and he held a rock in his hand. And so he would get himself to a point of almost falling asleep. But if he fell asleep, the rock would fall out of his hand and would wake him back up. But it was in this state that allowed for him to be able to kind of tap into his higher consciousness and be able to therefore come up with all of these crazy inventions that he ended up doing. And it was because he sat in this thinking chair and he let himself almost fall asleep. And it's like, how many times do we just not acknowledge the fact that slowing down and taking care of ourselves and doing those things can actually give us huge impact yeah. if we just take the time to do it? And I think that the other thing that you said that really stood out to me is that oftentimes we don't acknowledge that we teach other people how to treat us.
Yeah.
And so the fact that I'm not saying to the team, like, hey guys, I need 5 minutes, or hey, yeah. I need a call room at this hospital. If you're going to keep me up all night, like I need to refresh before I can do, you know, cases mm-hmm. all day. We teach people how to treat us. And I think that sometimes as people pleasers, we really have a hard time because we don't want to become, you know, don't want to be perceived as high maintenance or bothersome or demanding, when really it's just setting some boundaries, right?
All those things are resonating. And, you know, I always think of a something that I heard Brené Brown say whenever I talk about self-care and caring for self, because for me, there's also a community piece involved, right? Like when we talk about being able to care for self, we have to ask that people around us in our inner circle allow us to be able to have that time and work with us to support us, to be able to build that into our time, recognizing that what's good for us is good for them. It's in a reciprocal relationship. And I remember reading about Brené Brown when she was, I think she was writing her book, Dare to Lead. And the research that she was doing for that book was talking about the idea of belonging. And what she thought the research would show is that belonging would be what most of us describe it to be, is that feeling of wanting to fit in and wanting to be part of something. And the reason I mention it here is because what the research actually showed was that belonging for all of the people she interviewed actually meant getting to a place where they felt that they could come home to themselves. And I think that when we allow ourselves to just get really quiet and stop all the chatter and do what fills us up, that's really the true part of belonging. It's not about all the other things that I think we sometimes associate with belonging. And I just, so for me, like I almost can't have that conversation without talking about community and self-care without sort of bringing that up. Because I think that really in terms of what, you know, you've been saying is that we do have to just quiet sometimes to be able to find the answers that we already have, and they're there and they've just been waiting for us to sort of peel back those pieces. But that's always resonated with me. And I think of that often when I, you know, talk about this subject with people that are really struggling with it.
Oh my gosh, that is so beautifully said. And there's so many things that I want to dive into, but I would first love for you to tell us a little bit more about your own journey, Michelle. It's really nice to just know that you understand when those of us that are listening, like, yeah, I feel stuck. And so tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah. So you know me, I have the gift of gab, so I'll try to keep it brief, but so it goes back to, you know, and really this story took me a while to not remember, but to really identify that this was the purpose and the why of really why I wanted to continue to move forward with my business, despite why I had originally started it. And I couldn't tell this story for a long time because the story actually told me, because there was just so much emotion wrapped up in it for me. But in 2006, I moved across country. I live in Canada, so I moved to British Columbia. And it was to take a general manager position at a long-term care home for a very large operator here in the province. And I had had several phone interviews leading up to me accepting the position. In fact, they even flew me out for one of those opportunities to see the home. And everything did seem to be running well. And I think it's important to note that I don't believe that the employer intentionally tried to set me up for failure. But I'll explain that in a little bit. And so I came out here in September of 2006, really excited to start this new chapter of my life at 35 years old, which I thought was ridiculous because I was single and I thought, who moves across country at 35 years old to start all over? And now I would think, why wouldn't you do that at 35 years old? After about 3 or 4 months of me accepting the position and really doing all the things that I had always been told to do as a leader, you know, I shudder now when I say I was having pizza parties and trying to give people autonomy and decision making that, you know, was a couple of levels above them so that they could see the bigger picture and how their work fit into that. I could feel the shifts in the attitudes of the staff starting to change. And I didn't really understand why. And I came to work one morning and my admin assistant had said to me, licensing is on their way and they're coming to do an investigation. Now, here in Canada, we have health authorities that will come in and do inspections randomly, just to make sure you're doing everything you're supposed to be doing and residents are getting the care they need. And so that's not unusual. And I wasn't worried about that. So I said, well, that's totally fine. We have nothing to hide. And she said, no, you don't understand. They're coming to investigate you. And I, you know, kind of said, excuse me. And she said, they're coming because one of our nurses put in a complaint that you asked her to cover up the death of a resident. And it was in that moment that I legitimately felt the blood drain from my body. And it wasn't because I knew it was true. It was because I knew it wasn't true. And I hadn't been working for very long in this workplace. And I immediately went to that place, what if they think this is true? And that this actually happened. And, so it, you know, I think you do what you do naturally, instinctually. You just keep putting one foot in front of the other to get yourself through that. And at the end of a really rigorous 2-day investigation, it was unanimously decided that I had not done what I was being accused of doing. And so when they asked the nurse why she had elaborated and fabricated some of the conversations we had had, her response was, well, we, meaning that she was sort of the speaker for others, thought that if we could get her fired, everything would go back to the way that it was. And it was really in that moment that I realized that I was completely ill-prepared to manage a completely dysfunctional team who had this learned behavior.
Right.
That if they could, you know, do something like this, it would kind of quote unquote fix the problem. And I think that a lot of employers like that one hire people like me who had the core competencies to be able to do their job well in terms of operations. And they just think that you're going to figure the leadership part of it out and how to work with people in a really kind and humane way.
Right.
And that's really sort of my mission moving forward now is how do we bring humanity back to the workplace? Mm-hmm. And I believe it's really understanding how we're more hardwired to connect than we are different. The gaps that are different between us are only there because we have to seek a curiosity to find out why. But where are we more alike? And so, you know, it was at that point, I knew that I had two options. I could either quit and walk away and know that I was probably going to end up in another work environment that, you know, could be equally as toxic because I had worked in them before as a nurse in a hospital, or I could dig my heels in and try to figure it out. And because I come from a long line of stubborn women and I am a Leo, I like to think that I come by that honestly, I decided to dig my heels in and really try to figure this out. And so, you know, where I am now is a culmination of all of those years of trial and error, reading a ton of books, but ultimately getting people to a place where they understand that, to our conversation earlier, you don't need a book that tells you how to follow a process, or that if you acquire, you know, X, Y, and Z attributes, you will be a phenomenal leader.
Right.
Everything you have, you already, or everything you need, you already have. Mm-hmm. It's really just about unpacking how you can show up to make people feel safe and how they can trust you. And, you know, that's actually not that difficult. I think we've made leadership far more complicated than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. I really don't think it's that hard. Relationships can be difficult, yes, but I don't think leadership is that hard. So, you know, I started my business in 2017, really out of necessity. I was leaving a position and I had a group of physicians of family practice that I had been working closely with. And they said to me, oh, we wish we would have known you were leaving because we would have hired you. And about 3 months later, they reached out to me and said, hey, listen, we got some funding and we were wondering if you could create and develop some curriculum and then teach it to a bunch of long-term care homes in the Vancouver area. And I said, yeah, I guess I can do that. And my husband, who is very much more an entrepreneur and has his own business, said, you need to start your own business. And I thought, why? It's one client. Like, I don't need it. That's too much work. And he said, start your own business. So I really started it for that reason. And I thought that I would do typical consulting work, creating policies and procedures for organizations and doing some curriculum delivery because I love to teach. I love what I get from participants, but I also love being able to be in that space and really stretch myself. And when I was doing this curriculum delivery, I realized that sometimes what you think you want and you will love, you actually don't.
Yeah.
And I loved the client and I loved the work I was doing for them, but I couldn't see myself doing this kind of this rinse and repeat over and over and over
right,
again.
Right. Yeah.
So I had to really think, well, if I'm going to turn this business into more than a side gig and it's going to be sort of a legacy project for me moving into retirement, there has to be more. The work has to have meaning. And that led me back to the story that I just shared, and that I just don't want anyone to have to work in a toxic workplace because it doesn't have to be that way. And I think that there's a lot of leaders that could be exceptional. They just haven't been taught how to do it, and they're all struggling, and they're just really waiting to have a path forward. So that's, you know, that leads me to the work I'm doing now.
You know, that is so powerful. And there's so much that I would love to do and talk about, but I want to just say this morning, during my morning routine, I was actually reading the book of Joshua in the Bible, and it really hit me when I was reading it, which is so interesting that we're having this conversation, that Joshua had to take over leadership from what Moses had set up. Mm-hmm. And the people that Moses had been guiding through the wilderness for 40 years had grown to be, you know, kind of grumblers. They were quick to make excuses. They were quick to complain. They were quick to give up. They were quick to be scared and let fear get in their way. And so in all, you know, lovely, out of loving, you know, respect can kind of be considered like this toxic environment that sometimes we can be in. And Joshua was able to come into that, and he had to take on that situation and was still able to step in and accomplish what he had to do. And I think that sometimes as leaders, we come into a situation and it's like, gosh, if only I could just start over. If only I could start from scratch, because I know I can make something amazing. But that's not the case in 99.9% of the time. We come in as a leader into whatever quote unquote mess we might have to be taking over, or in other situations, if an environment has been, you know, allowed to be a certain way for a long time, but maybe it's not the best for that group of people or organization, they don't want the change because they've been getting what they wanted this whole time, right? Mm-hmm. And so many reasons why stepping in is so difficult. And I think, like, I love leadership. I have an entire section in my library designated to leadership. Like, I just, it's my jam. But what I think is really interesting is that oftentimes we can read in a book, just like you said, like you can read in a book, you have all of these theories that you can apply. But when the rubber hits the road, when you have actual human beings with actual lives and situations outside of their work environment and the way that people interact with one another and the way groupthink happens, the ways that we are able to implement what we're learning in leadership is almost, it feels like too many variables to control mm-hmm. at times. And so I would love to know from your perspective, what are some of the biggest leadership hurdles that you have seen in your own situation or the people that you counsel?
Yeah, self-doubt, I think, for a lot of people. So, you know, one of the biggest things that I had to overcome as a leader was I had always been told, well, when you're a leader, you're supposed to have all the answers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's why you're there. And right. And that was a huge kind of awakening for me when I realized that that was actually not great advice that I had received from a lot of people that I still have a lot of respect for and are, I still consider to be mentors of mine. But I think that when we know better, we do better, and we're all learning and growing. And, you know, I'm going to carry the football down the field, so to speak, to a certain point, and I'm going to have to drop it and let someone else pick it up, and they're going to run it a little further. So the work that I do now isn't just for me, it's also for the next generations to come. And they're going to learn from where I've, you know, left off, and they're going to run that ball a little bit further down the field. So I think for me, one of them was learning that I didn't need to know all the answers and actually admitting that and showing some vulnerability, not in a way that I felt that people would necessarily take advantage of that, but from a real human perspective to say, I actually don't know. And that's a great question.
Yeah.
Let's go figure this out together. Actually strengthened my leadership capacity mm-hmm. as opposed to trying to kind of fake it till you make it idea mm-hmm. and not let people know that I didn't have all the answers. And I think it also empowers people when you do that to work with you, to collaborate more, to say, oh, well, if you don't know, but we can figure this out together, that's great. Like, I really like that idea. Mm-hmm. But also when I admit I don't know, it lets people know, like, wow, that was probably really hard for her mm-hmm. to be in a leadership role and admit that maybe she didn't know that. And that automatically starts to create that connection of trust mm-hmm. and that, you know, you can be safe in that space yeah. and it's okay to say, I don't know. You know, I think that leadership sometimes is seen as this, like, you know, the more formalized, stuffy boardroom. Mm-hmm. But I really believe that we're leaders in all aspects of our life. Huh? And so the way that I try to show up as a leader now is more around a lifestyle as opposed to a position that I think of in terms of leadership. And that's how I try to convey leadership to the people that I work with as well, is that when you do the deep dive into yourself and you start to uncover all of those pieces about how you see the world from your lived experience, and how it can be helpful to have people around you that have very different experiences than you, and how that then will then impact how you hold space in the container you create for other people to feel a part of your circle.
Yeah. It
makes you an extraordinary leader because you're showing up with humility and curiosity at every conversation. And when it's done in a way that really is just like, I'm just here because I want to be part of the conversation, people feel that to know like, wow, I feel like she's just showing up and there's really nothing in it for her. She mm-hmm. just really wants to be part of what's next.
Yeah.
And I think that when you can do that and allow yourself to just be, to your point, and not be following some algorithm or step-by-step process, and just show up as yourself and lean into that, mm-hmm. that's where I think the magic happens.
100%. I totally agree with you. And as an employee, you know, I have worked for, you know, corporate, you know, big healthcare institutions myself mm-hmm. for many, many years. And, you know, really when it came down to it, I felt like if the leader was able to make me feel like I wasn't a number, that they genuinely cared and that they were advocating on behalf of, you know, us as a whole, it helped us to like lower our defenses a little bit. Like, okay, like, you know what I'm saying? Like we didn't have to have our spiky armor up, like trying to, you know, protect ourselves. If I could trust that they genuinely cared about me as a human being and not a number, and that they were advocating for me behind the scenes, that was huge. Yeah. Do you find the same in your experience?
Absolutely. I mean, as a nurse, yes, I found that. And I think that when, and now as a leadership development coach, I find that when I do a lot of research that's out there, because I always tell everybody, like, I'm not super special in the sense that I have created all of these concepts. Mm-hmm. What I like to do is really dig down into the research that other people have done that is validated, where there's evidence to support it. That's that nursing piece of mine. There has to be evidence-based kind of to be able to know that it's working. And then to be able to take that back to people and deliver it to them in a way that's easily digestible and applicable to their life and their practice so they know how to implement it. It's great to have all of the research, but if you have no idea how to implement it into your life, then it's really just, you know, words on a page.
Yeah.
And so what a lot of the research shows that one of the primary reasons that people will leave jobs and positions that they love, even careers that they love, they've taken years to cultivate, is because of bad leadership or to escape like a bad manager who makes them feel unheard, unseen, undervalued. Or, you know, the organization, I guess, on a larger part. So yeah, I absolutely agree with you, not only from a research perspective, but also I felt that myself working as a nurse where I was just sort of a number and, you know, I wasn't really, I didn't feel that I was seen as an individual. And that's one of the things that I challenge some of the organizations that I work with is to completely get rid of the word employee in their vocabulary. Take it out of your policies and procedures. Don't use the word employee. And it's not that I have anything against that word. And I think that it does serve a purpose. But I think in terms of the idea of getting used to seeing people that work with you as part of your business or that you support in a leadership capacity as humans, as individuals that have individual needs, as opposed to a position where they're an employee and you're a leader, manager, whatever it is. I think that sometimes we can get lost in these terms that we create, but when you just call that person an individual, it allows you to see them in terms of what they need and all aspects of what they're bringing to work. We don't leave our home life behind when we show up to work and we've had a child who woke up with a fever, but we still felt like we had to send them to daycare because we're late and we know our team's going to be short staffed, so we still go to work and now we're not feeling great about that. You're not going to leave that in your car when you walk into work, that's still going to stay with you. And I think that any employer who doesn't acknowledge that or ask those questions, like, hey, you seem a little off today. Is there anything we can do to help and explore what that looks like for people? That, again, that's where I think all the magic starts to happen because that starts to create the connections where just people feel like, wow, like somebody notices I'm not my normal quote unquote self today. Something's a bit off and someone cares enough to take the time to ask the question.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, in my experience, both from a leader and a recipient of leadership, when I feel like somebody is genuinely like cares about me, I am more willing to go above and beyond because I care about them back. And it's like, because I think a lot of us, like you've already said, are perfectionists when we show up anyway, but it's like this whole level, another level of devotion and loyalty that happens when I know that my employer genuinely like cares about me, values me, and I want to step up and help in bigger, greater ways. And I'm just curious on your perspective as a leader, you know, how do we foster that? I know, I love the fact that you're like, don't call them an employee, call them an individual. What are some of the other ways that you think we could really start to foster those relationships to allow for people to be really, really honored as the human resource that they are, not just a resource?
That's a great question. You know, I mean, I think that there's so many things that you can do. You know, I think first is recognizing, to your point, that when we feel connected to someone and we have that moment where we feel that we're making a connection, we're releasing oxytocin, and that's that feel good hormone. And we that is reciprocal. So when we feel that way because someone has made us feel that way, there's this natural instinct to want to reciprocate that and to pass it along. And I think that when you can start that cycle, it starts to create this really healthy culture within like a workplace, but you can also, you know, within your home life, your family life, that can be also reciprocated. I know what it feels like when someone does something really kind for me, and I know they're not doing it for any other reason than just because they know it's going to make me feel better. Right. I want to reciprocate that. Yes, I want to reciprocate it back to that person, but I also then want to do that for other people because I feel like I'm in a better space. I feel nourished and cared for. You know, one of the things that I tell leaders to do every day, and I believe in small shifts making monumental changes. I believe that in all aspects of our life, self-care, leadership approaches, is to kind of get out of your office. If you're in an office, to get out of your office every day and go to where your people are and be seen. People can't feel connected to you, and you won't feel connected to them if they don't know who you are.
Right.
And that's a great way for you to be able to really lean into asking those questions. How are you today? And when people say, I'm fine, to dig a little deeper and, you know, say, I'm really concerned that we're creating a space where you feel safe. And when you say, I'm fine, I'm not sure that you actually are fine. And to do that in a way that feels not over assuming to people, but really that it's coming from that place of genuine concern.
Right.
You know, I think there's a lot of things that we can do, but one of the things is making an effort to start those connections and really asking questions of people with curiosity and to see where you're connected. Again, you know, I know I've said this so many times, but I think it's so hard for people sometimes in a more formalized role to feel that maybe they're intruding when they're asking questions about people's personal lives and they're at work, or maybe that's a leadership style that's going to be perceived as weak or unprofessional. And you do have to learn how to walk this fine line of not making people feel like you're asking questions they're not ready to share. But you can't do that, I think, in a way that, you know, if someone tells me that they have a child, you know, I can let them know I don't have any small children, but if I did, I can say, oh, you know, I have a daughter who's five as well, and she goes to this school and she's really into these things. You know, and so then you can just try to find places where you have like things in common and start having conversations about that. It doesn't always have to be work related, but those connections are going to make people then feel safer to come to you when there is a problem and a concern and want to open up and have you be part of that and have you have them be part of that conversation in terms of what's the path forward.
And I just got to ask you, because I think we've gotten really, really great content here around how to make the employee feel appreciated and building that trust. But I also have to acknowledge this really, really hard balance between a leader having to keep the company as a business and the processes and the things that have to go on in order for us to have a business. So the organization's best interests, let's just say, and the employee's best interest. How do you make sure that both of them are met in a way that, you know, you can accomplish the and life? Because it sometimes feels like it has to be an or, right?
Yeah. It's that zero sum effect, right? Where you feel like if you give to one, you're having to give up the other. Yeah, you know, my approach is probably not the only one, but what I have found works really well for myself is getting really clear on my core values, first of all, in terms of, it's always shocking to me, and I say shocking not in that I pass judgment, but shocking to me that so many of the leaders that I work with, when I ask them, well, what are your core values? They have no clue. Mm-hmm. They don't know. And so, you know, I think it's getting really clear on what your core values are personally outside of the workspace. And then when you're working in your whatever workspace you're working in, to understand how your personal core values align with the values of the organization or the group that you're working with, and to see where there's gaps. And it's okay if there's gaps. Like, you know, one of the things I don't value, you know, making a lot of money for profit as part of my own personal core values. Mm-hmm. I want wealth and abundance in my personal life, but that's because I want to help other people that are at a different place in their life who are struggling. Right. My husband and I have always dreamed of starting a foundation. We, you know, we help to support our community and families that are not in the same place we are, so that we feel like we're giving back. That for me, that is not about just creating abundance and wealth because I want, you know, dollars and cents in my bank account. But for a business, that's important, because if they're not generating revenue right. and they're not making money, then they don't have a business and they can't employ right. these people. So right. it's okay where there's gaps, but I think it's just identifying why the gaps are there in terms of your values. And then it's working with the people within that team or that group to say, okay, what are our values going to be in terms of our shared values, so that you can always come back to that safe place when you start to kind of get astray. Maybe someone's not, you know, holding themselves accountable for part of the work that they're doing. You can bring that kind of conversation back to say, do you remember when we established what our shared values were going to be and we talked about self-accountability? I think we need to have a little conversation about that, because here's what I'm seeing from my perspective. I'd love to hear what you think about that.
Yeah.
So it's not an attack at the person. It's really right. more focusing on the behavior and the right. expectation based on the core values of the group.
Yeah. And it's interesting, because I'm kind of curious if this is a shift in just where we are as a people today versus if this has kind of always been this way. But when I think about service industries like healthcare or education, for example, I think it's really common for our core values as an institution to say the needs of the patient come first, or no student left behind, or whatever, you know what I'm saying, right? So it's the person that we serve as our core value. And I think that, you know, oftentimes I've seen that happen where with a disgruntled workforce, it's like, well, remember, guys, we all have this shared value of the needs of the patient come first, right? But at some point, the corporation or the leadership kind of fails to consider that if I'm not taking care of the employee, I can't take care of the patient or the student. Yeah. And so it seems like it's almost like there has to be this acknowledgement and an adaptation or an adoption of that as an acknowledged core value. It's like in the generation ahead of us, right? Mm-hmm. Like you just showed up and you worked your fingers to the bone and you were glad you have a job for 40 years and you're glad you have a pension. And I think that, I don't know, like what?
No, I love that, because I've been saying this for probably the better part of a decade. Mm-hmm. And in healthcare, it seems so counterintuitive, and I get pushback all the time, because we say we're here for our patients. When you're in, you know, healthcare, you're there to help people become healthy and well, or to improve quality of life. And so it seems counterintuitive to say that our primary focus is on our people, not on our patients or the people that are, you know, there for us to serve. And most organizations in the healthcare space don't want to say that, because they're like, oh, well, that's just bad business. Like, of course, our patients have to be our top priority. And what I'm saying is, from a business lens, if you look at it from a business lens, is that it's good business to put your people first, because to all of the points we just discussed, yeah. when your people feel that they are the most important focus of an organization, and that they are nourished and cared for, and that they can show up in whatever version is the best version of themselves on that day and still be productive at 60%. They don't have to be at 100% every day, that they still have value add when they are showing up to work, that they will give extraordinary care and value to your customer base, your patients, whomever they are, just because they feel so compelled to do so, because they feel that they are being well cared for. And they will tell everybody else, this is the best place on the planet to work. Like, you need to come work here. So it's also a recruitment strategy of sorts. Yeah,
the problem solves itself in a way. But I'm curious if you have any downsides. Like, I'm curious if, you know, people that are from the traditionalists or the boomer generation who like, okay, well, these kids, in air quotes, right, even though we're like grown-ass people, are, you know, can be entitled. Like, why do you feel like you need to be entitled to these things? Like, you don't realize how, what we've worked through and everything else. And so it's almost like, I don't want to give you all of this, like, attention or these, you know, affirmations and all these things, because now I'm just breeding an entitled generation. I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I think that's why that a lot of organizations really struggle with intergenerational workforces, where you've got baby boomers and now you've got millennials, and you know, they're just at different stages. And a lot of people of my age, I've heard, you know, all millennials think that they're so entitled and none of them want to work, and they come out of university and they want $200,000 a year job. They don't want to do the work to get there, or they want to work only from home and they pick and choose. And you know, whether that's true or not in terms of the experience you've had, I think that the conversation is changing in terms of the ability for people to look for what they want, to feel that that's a right fit for them. And again, I really believe that the work that we've done to this point is that when we know better, we do better. I think that when I look at my mom's generation, I grew up on the notion that if you work hard, you can get whatever you want, but you need to do the work. If you don't do the work, you won't get it. And while I don't believe that that's not true, I mean, I do believe that to be true, I also believe that I've seen other people who haven't worked that hard, but they're doing something that they love, that's resonating and connecting with people, and they're serving in a different way, and they have incredible abundance and financial wealth in their life. So I'm thinking, well, that's actually not true in some capacity. And so I think that the people that are really struggling, in my opinion, are really the ones that are just not ready to receive the idea that there can be more than one way. And how do we figure that out and navigate that space within the context of a work environment in a way that makes everybody feel that they're not being pushed aside or undervalued or devalued for the work that they've done and the contributions they've had? And I think for me, that comes a little bit from the work that I had the privilege of doing when I worked with many First Nations here in British Columbia. And some of the knowledge keepers and elders reminded me that there's a Musqueam word that's Natsuma. And it basically means that we are all one, we are all connected. And so the work that we do now is connected to everything else, but it's also for the next seven generations. But in order to do that work with honor, we also have to look at where we came and honor the work from the people before us. So the changes we're making isn't in disrespect of or not acknowledging what has come before. It's really just saying that that's as far as you can carry the ball, and things have changed, needs change. We're all evolving as humans. We need to do things a little bit differently than we used to. And then you've got to find that balance.
Right. And I think, you know, one of the things that I always find is ironic is that if we talk to people who are, you know, a generation or two ahead of us, when they look back on their life, they wish they would have had more balance. And so it's almost like people that are in the younger generation are taking their advice. They're like, thank you for teaching me what you wish you would have done differently and executing it. And I think that we could talk like for hours and hours and hours. So one of the things I would love for you to do is to address the people right now who are listening, Michelle, that are feeling stuck right now. Like, what kind of encouragement or last minute tips would you give them?
I would say not to give up on yourself, no matter where you are. You know, I think in my 40s, you know, like I said, I moved cross country at 35 and I thought that was ridiculous. And now I'm thinking, that's actually not a big deal. You know, in my 40s, I started my own business and thought, this is crazy. I've never thought of myself as an entrepreneur. What are you doing? And now I'm thinking, this isn't a side gig for me anymore. This is going to be the passion and why I'm here. And I think to continue to get curious about yourself and allow yourself to grow and step into those spaces of, I never thought of things this way before. maybe I want to think about things. The transformation that I've had in the last 2 years in terms of a lot of self-growth and discovery have come from really odd different places for me, and really exploring meditation and journaling in a whole different way. And, I think that there's just so many opportunities for us to get out of our own way. And I really believe that sometimes fear is what stops us from where we are to getting the life or the things that we want. And if we can figure out where that fear is rooted and work through that so that we can feel safe and excited to kind of step through that, knowing that to get to where you need to be, sometimes there's going to be a couple of hurdles you have to jump through. That really, it's just, you know, we're getting in our own way. For me, the quote that I heard from Bronnie Ware when she was writing her book, The Regrets of the Dying, has stayed with me for as long as I read the book. And she had said that the number one regret of the dying of all the people that she interviewed for that book was that they lived the life that others wanted for them, not the life they wanted for themselves. And for me, that just, whenever I'm thinking like, I'll do it tomorrow. Well, maybe I'll do it next week or next month. And then I start thinking, what are you waiting for? Stop living the life that you think everybody else wants or feels comfortable. Go do it. I don't mean to sound morbid, but none of us are guaranteed tomorrow.
Right.
I think when we sit in that space for too long, it gives us kind of this get out of jail free card to just, well, I'll just back burner it for a little longer.
Yep.
And I think that when we can get really excited about those things that are bouncing around and need air to breathe in our brain, that, you know, it really allows us to say, wow, I'm capable of really amazing things.
Right.
And I think that's the exciting piece. I used to be terrified. A year ago, I was terrified to come onto a podcast. Terrified. And if I wasn't prepared and had streams of notes in front of me, I thought, I'm not going to show up in a good way. I can't serve this people's community. This is horrifying for me. And now it's not that I don't come prepared. I always come prepared, but I also know that I have what I need. And sometimes the best conversations are the ones like we're having. They're the most organic ones, the ones that just come because they're supposed to come in the moment. And it's meant for someone to hear, or it's meant for me to have my voice in that way. And now I get excited every time I have the opportunity and the gift and the honor to be on someone's podcast. It's not something that I fear anymore. And yes, that's a muscle that I had to learn to flex, mm-hmm. but it's also because I've changed my perspective on a lot of things.
Right.
And so, you know, I think I have a tattoo. It's one I got in my 20s. And, you know, it is a symbol that reminds me that every day is a new beginning. And I really try to hang on to that because I think that sometimes I get caught up in this perfectionism of, well, I can't do it. I'll wait until I can kind of get that, tweak it and make it a little bit better.
Yeah.
Or, oh gosh, I didn't do what I wanted today. And then you kind of get down on yourself. And when I think of that every day as a new beginning, it's really like a little etch-a-sketch where you can just shake away the previous days before and know that you get to wake up the next day and start all over again. Doesn't matter what you didn't do or things you didn't get right the day before. Today you got a whole new chance to try again. So, you know, I think those are the thoughts that often kind of travel around in this head of mine that felt right to share this morning.
I just love that. And I just feel like what a beautiful way to tie in our entire conversation. I'm just going to say, So you started out by saying that, you know, you had this love for the geriatric population and the fact that the guiding principle of everything that you just shared is from basically interviewing people on their deathbed. And what we can learn from the people who you know, looked back on their lives. And so what a beautiful honor to tie those two passions together. You also, you know, we've been spending most of our conversation on leadership, but really comes back to self-leadership, leading ourselves. Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned that leadership has, you mentioned trust over and over and over again, but leadership and especially self-leadership involves trusting ourselves. Mm-hmm. Finding ways to trust ourselves, finding ways that everything that you've gone through, you are building the resiliency and the tools to be able to make it happen and to start trusting yourself, start trusting that you have everything within you. And every day when you have that etch-a-sketch and you shake it up, you have a tool from that day before that you didn't have before. And so it's really just putting all of those beautiful things together to leading yourself to the life that you would love, and taking the advice from the people and the leaders that have gone before us that can teach us the way. So thank you so much for that, for just everything. Like, I just appreciate you so much. So Michelle, in just a moment, what I'm going to do is have you ask the audience a question that's going to allow them to move forward from where they are to where they want to be. But first, I want to just make sure that you guys all remember to hit subscribe so that you don't miss any of these episodes. Make sure that you leave a review and let Michelle know everything that you loved about our conversation and what really stood out to you. It's always so much fun to see you guys interacting with us in social media. So share this episode out. Tag us in your stories. Let us know that you're listening, because we love to interact with you. It's so much thinking fun. And just know that if you guys are ready to get unstuck, you have two amazing women right here that are caring about you. Check out all of Michelle's ways to work with her, to follow her journey, in the show notes so that you can get unstuck in that way. And you guys, like, here's to creating the better life. Here's to creating the life that we can't wait to wake up to live. Here's to creating the bigger impact that we want to make, because all of us have this beautiful divine purpose that oftentimes is literally just the discovery of coming back to who we are, right? And who we've always been made to be. So Michelle, what question would you love the audience to think about that's going to help move them forward?
Yeah, well, thank you for all of that. That was extraordinary, and I feel very humbled to be here. So thank you. I have a leadership program that, and one of the things that we spend a lot of time is really that self-discovery piece, as you had mentioned, and the importance of that. And in one of the modules that I go live with are my groups, I always ask this question, and it always evokes a lot of emotion for the people that go through the program. And so while I don't want to, you know, trigger anybody into feeling over emotional, I know it's a question that I think sometimes we need to ask ourselves and we don't, and or people have never been given the permission to ask themselves. And so I guess the question to try to get unstuck is, if I didn't have to be fill in the blank perfect, whatever that is, and for a lot of people, it's perfect. So if I didn't have to be perfect, I'd be. And just really allow yourself to kind of sit in that or journal on that and see what comes up and what resonates. Because I think that we create a narrative and a story of who we need to show up as to serve not only our professional, but our personal life. And when we let some of those things kind of just melt away, the true essence of who we are allows to come forward and step into that. And I think that's really the beginning of often getting unstuck and feeling really safe to show the truest version of ourselves to the people that we know love us already and will support us and care for us and nurture us.
I love that. Thank you so much for everything that you've done to contribute to all of our lives today. You guys, thank you so much for listening. I will see you here all next Wednesday. Michelle, thank you so much again. I appreciate you. Bye, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the Unstuck Podcast. I'm so grateful to be on this journey with you. And don't forget to check out the show notes if you want to get into my private club, The Better Club, to be able to learn better ways to be better, do better, and have better. So until next time, keep showing up. Let's get unstuck together. Have a great day.